You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Joining us from Canberra is the Minister for Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs, the Honourable Alan Tudge. Mr. Tudge, welcome to SBS Radio.
Thanks very much, Manpreet.
Minister, I have many questions for you relating to the delays in processing of citizenship applications and the really, really small number of citizenship approvals granted during this financial year. But before that, let me first begin with the English language testing provision that you had first introduced in the Parliament last year. It was struck down by the Senate. The last we heard about it was that you intended to bring that legislation back. Where are we at with that?
So we've been looking at this question for the last 12 months and myself personally very closely over the last 6 months and consulting with different community groups, consulting with the business sector and other members of the Australian public. We do have an issue in terms of the growing number of people not having the capacity to speak English in Australia, and we're rapidly approaching 1 million people. And so we think it's in everybody's interest for people to at least have a basic conversational level of English language capacity so that they can get better jobs, so that we can guarantee social cohesion, and of course it's important for the democratic process as well. So I've signalled that what we're going to be looking at is some sort of conversational level of English at maybe a primary school level, but we haven't settled on the precise formula yet, and we would still like people to have that level of English language capability before they become a citizen.
So before they become a citizen or before they become a permanent resident, because that was also mooted around.
Yeah, so that's been put to me. It's in part because some have suggested that if it's just at the citizenship level, then it may be an impediment and a barrier for people wanting to go on and become a citizen, and arguably the permanent residency is the most important thing for new migrants. So we're still taking a look at that. I suppose I'd reassure all your listeners that we're not considering putting up a barrier that says that before you come into the country you have to have this conversational English ability, unless it's already in place presently, which it is for the skilled migration program, and also would have exemptions for people who are over the age of 60. So if you're sponsoring in your parent, for example, and they don't have very good English, then that's no problem there. So we're still looking closely at whether or not, though, there is an ability to provide further incentives for people to take the effort, do the English language classes, get at least a conversational level so that they can have, they can talk to their neighbours, they can purchase things at the shops, and that we can guarantee our social cohesion.
So, Minister, you're clearly looking at bringing that legislation in the next financial year?
We are. I mean, ideally we would be doing this year, but we've still got a bit to go and we haven't settled on the precise provisions yet. I've been consulting very broadly over the last 6 months and we'll do a little bit more before we settle it, and then we'll be able to announce it.
So apart from the English language testing, there was also mention of the increase in the residency requirement to go up from 1 year to 4 years before people could become citizens. Is that still on the table?
Listen, that's still something which we are looking at. Most people are in the country for 3 to 4 years presently before they apply for their citizenship. There's a 3-year minimum, as you probably know. That's relatively short compared to many other countries, certainly compared to, say, the United States or the UK or Canada or New Zealand, which are the comparable countries.
Yeah.
So we're still taking a look at that. Again, that's not settled. And we've been consulting in relation to that. I suppose we do want people to, we want to understand who's coming into the country. We want good people to come in, as we've succeeded at doing over the last many, many decades.
Yes.
We want them to adopt Australian values, ideally integrate well into the community, and then become citizens and be part of the Australian fabric. That's been the Australian migration success story, of which certainly my parents were part of, and the Indian community has been an increasing part of that in recent, the last couple of decades particularly. And as you know, the Indian community is now the fastest, now the largest source of skilled migration to the country, and are making a terrific contribution to the country.
Absolutely. I believe the Indian community is a top source for citizenship in the last 5 years as well. But that's why all of these questions are far more important to the Indian community as they are to the others. So coming back to the English skills, Minister,
yep.
you did mention that it helps people get jobs and it helps them build a cohesive society. But to quote you, not so long ago, you said people with little or no English skills can relegate a migrant to a life of welfare dependency. You use that word of welfare dependency. What is the evidence for that?
No, what I was saying, that's been taken out of context. That was in reference to some critics who say that for the humanitarian intake that we should not put any obligations upon them to learn the English language. And my point was that when you look at the data of the refugee program, those without English, only 15% of them are in the employment market. But if you've got good English, 85% are in the employment market. It is that stark. And so my point was that it is absolutely in the interests of the new refugees who are coming into this country to learn English as quickly as possible, because then you're going to have the best chance of getting into the employment market. And those who suggest that they shouldn't have to learn English, my point is that in some respects, you will relegate them to a lifetime of welfare dependence, because that's what the data shows.
But Minister, when the migrant community hears things like this, that, you know, little or no English skills can put you on to a life of welfare dependency, that really does create discord. You can understand why the migrants would not like that, especially when the government's own studies show that migrants contribute heavily to the economy. I can see the numbers for 2014-15, where the lifetime net contribution to the budget was $6.9 billion by skilled migrants.
Oh, absolutely. We have been tremendously successful at attracting skilled migrants to this country. And as I said, India is the major source of skilled migrants today. And there's something like 450,000 people who were born in India who today are fully integrated into the Australian community and making a tremendous contribution. My point, though, and if you look at the data, Manpreet, in relation to the employment outcomes with English and without English, and this has changed over time. Today, if you don't have good English, and this is across all new people to the country, your chances of being in employment are much, much lower than if you've got reasonable English. Amongst men with poor English or no English, only 40% have a job. If you've got good English, 80% have a job. It is that stark. So it is actually vital from an employment perspective to be able to speak at least that conversational level English, preferably better over time. I would point out this has changed, by the way, in terms of the employment market over the decades. You know, back in the 1950s and 60s, it didn't matter so much if you didn't have English when you came to Australia, because we basically had full employment and there wasn't the same level of occupational health and safety requirements as there are today. And so nowadays the business community is saying, listen, unless you can actually have that basic level of English, it is, you know, you're going to struggle in our business because you won't be able to read those occupational health and safety signs, understand some of the other requirements.
Now, moving to the backlog of citizenship applications, Minister, which are currently being assessed, we were told by the Department of Home Affairs that as of April 30th this year, there were over 200,000 citizenship applications still being processed. This is unprecedented, isn't it?
Well, the number of people applying for citizenship actually continues to grow each and every year. We've got we've been having about 190,000 people each year become permanent residents, and then typically a year or so after that, they're applying for citizenship, and that they're at relatively high historic numbers presently. So that's the first point. We've got more people applying for citizenship. I suppose the second point I'd make is that 75% of all applications are still processed within 14 months, and 90% are processed within 16 months. There are some outliers on the edges. Now, typically those outliers which are taking more than 16 months are just because we've got information which is lacking, or there's a greater security concern which might be apparent, which we just need to get to the bottom of. And so that's why there is some delay with some of those other ones.
Is it also the confusion that was caused with the bill that you tried to put it through Parliament last year and everything was put on hold? Because what we can see, but the latest numbers we had, in the first 8 months of this financial year, only 54,000 citizenship applications were approved, as compared to 140,000 in the previous year in 2016-17.
Yeah, so we're working through the citizenship applications, and we will get there. As I said, when the data itself, and I've just asked for this recent data, 75% are still being processed within 14 months. That's up to date as of the end of May. So that's still pretty good. Now, what does that mean? It means if someone has applied for citizenship, typically you'll only be waiting a year. You may have to wait a little bit longer, but of course you're guaranteed in terms of your permanent residency. So you're here in the country, you've got access to Medicare, you've got access to all of the other benefits by and large, and then just, you know, be a little bit patient for a few more months and that citizenship will come through, which then of course gives you access to votes, access to being a full member of the Australian family.
Minister, is it a resource issue? Do you need more case officers, or do you have a quota of the number of applications that are approved any year?
No, there's no quota. I mean, we do have incredible demand in terms of visa processing generally. Now, we've got about 9 million visas which are processed each and every year, and that is growing considerably each year. We expect that figure to grow to 13 million by 2028, in a decade's time. Now, not only have we got a significant demand for visa applications, but we've also got greater complexity, and there's a higher national security threshold these days.
Yes.
As well as, I think, people understand, we do have to be very careful about ensuring that we're doing the proper national security checks, so that we can keep the Australian public safe as much as humanly possible.
Understood. I think everybody understands that need. But looking at it, 140,000 applications for citizenship approved in the last year, and this year it doesn't seem like less than half have come through. Why isn't your department helping those people who want to pledge allegiance to the country? Why wouldn't you put some systems in place so that the backlogs are clear? Otherwise, this will keep ballooning, wouldn't it, Minister?
Oh, well, let's just wait and see. I don't think that's going to be the case, because, as I said, when I look at the data, I still see the fact that 75% of citizenship applications are processed within 14 months. Now, that has gone out absolutely a little bit over the last year. I acknowledge that, but nevertheless, we still are getting through those citizenship applications. And for most people, yes, it might be a couple of more months wait than perhaps they would have had to wait a couple of years ago, but it's a pretty significant prize at the end in terms of Australian citizenship, and I hope people will be patient with us, acknowledging that there is huge demand for both visa and citizenship applications at the moment.
We can only go by the complaints that we receive, Minister. I'm sure your department receives a fair share as well. There's so many different types, and one question in particular that stuck out for us is a couple who applied together at the same time last year, different nationalities. A person of one nationality was granted their citizenship much, much faster, whereas their wife is still awaiting outcome. Exactly the same date of application. As long as the citizenship application was linked, the gentleman who had the approval did not even get a call for citizenship ceremony. The moment he delinked it, he was able to become a citizen this month, and his wife's application is still in abeyance. It's been 16 months.
Yeah, listen, I obviously don't know the details of the particular couple that you are referring to. Every individual is individually assessed, and certainly from a character and a health and a security perspective, every individual is different. If you're coming from a country which has a higher national security profile, it may take longer, versus if you're coming from a country or a region within a country which is seen as a much safer destination where the national security risk is much lower. So it could be related to that.
Was from Hong Kong, Minister.
Husband or the wife?
The husband is from Britain.
Yep.
And his was approved pretty much within 4 months.
Yep.
The wife is from Hong Kong and she's still waiting 16 months on.
Yeah, so I just don't know what has occurred there. Now, sometimes there are bureaucratic stuff-ups. Now, that happens when you've got a huge department, when you've got 9 million visa applications each and every year. So if in that instance, if they're from, for example, Hong Kong, and they think that it's been an unreasonable delay, they could actually go to their local federal member of parliament, because if there is a bureaucratic stuff up there, then we can get that fixed, obviously, quite quickly. But I would say that 16 months, I gave you those figures before in terms of 90% are processed within 16 months. So it sounds unusual for her to be outside of that if you're from Hong Kong. But I just don't know the circumstances surrounding it.
I'll pass that on. But the one constant bane from our listeners that we get is the goalposts are constantly shifting. So someone who came in as a student, you know, back in 2008, 2009, and they've gone through the system, the skills list changes so regularly. And, you know, just getting permanent residency has taken many, many years for a lot of people. But the general bane with a lot of people is that the coalition government is far too tough on migrants. You know, the English language requirements keep changing. The skill lists keep changing. Citizenship test has been introduced. Processing times have completely ballooned. Visa application fees have gone up. What would your message be to the multicultural community, to the migrant community, as minister for them?
Well, as Minister for Multicultural Affairs, I'm always saying that we are the most successful multicultural country in the world. And indeed today, 28% of the Australian population was born overseas. And we've largely integrated people phenomenally well into Australia. And you compare that to, say, the United States, which is known as the Great Melting Pot. It only has 13% of people born overseas who live in...
With respect, Minister, it's becoming harder for migrants. You see the access to welfare payments and all of that is...
I don't see how you can say that when you actually look at the raw numbers. So last year we had 190,000 people who became permanent residents. The year before, a similar number. This year it'll be slightly down on that, but it's still at very high overall numbers, which is why the proportion of people born overseas who are Australian has actually been going up in recent years. It was just 25% of the population a few years ago. Now it is 28% of the population which is born overseas. We are one of the great immigrant countries in the world. Absolutely, undoubtedly, no question about that.
So, Minister, why change the laws that have been working?
Because we've always got to be adapting to what the present circumstances are. Now, we have to adapt to the national security challenges. Now, they have changed fundamentally over the last decade or two. Everybody understands that. We've now got a rapid increase in the number of people who aren't speaking the English language or don't have the capability to speak English, and we're rapidly approaching 1 million people in the country who don't have any capacity to speak English. Now, that then puts pressure on social cohesion, and we know from the data, as I was explaining before, that that means your chances of actually getting a good job and being able to make the most of your time and your life in Australia are diminished. So we'd want to address that. We're constantly making adjustments to the skilled migration program because we want to bring in people who can fill the skills gaps rather than necessarily bringing in tens of thousands of people into occupations where we already may have many Australians who can fulfill those jobs. Naturally, it will be adjusted from time to time to take into account the present day challenges as I've outlined.
So you believe the coalition government is not tough on migrants?
I think the record shows that we have welcomed as many people into Australia as than probably any other government in terms of the yearly intake of people who have become permanent residents and then subsequently we go on to become citizens of this country. You know, we want the best and brightest to come to Australia. Our whole country is built on migration. You know, my parents arrived here just before I was born, you know, came out here on a ship from Scotland. And the Indian community, particularly in the last, as I say, in the last decade, we've had hundreds of thousands of people who have successfully migrated to Australia. They've made it their home. They're contributing enormously to the Australian fabric, and I think they'll continue to do so.
Very final question, Minister. The parliamentary inquiry that has just started today into migration and especially migration agents and the education agencies, what do you hope to achieve from that?
So this is a parliamentary inquiry rather than a government inquiry as such. And it'll be done on a bipartisan basis, and in essence it's looking at the quality and standing of migration agents, of which there are obviously thousands in Australia, most of which do a very, very good job, but we do know there is some fraud and misconduct which has gone on in the past as well. So that committee is going to do a full inquiry into the migration agents profession and come up with some recommendations to ensure that we still have high quality migration agents, that we can stamp out any misconduct that might exist, and so that they can still help people into the country as they have been doing.
Alan Tudge, thank you very, very much for being so generous with your time and for bearing with all of my impertinent questions.
Not at all. You have some very, very good questions, and I know that many people have asked me those exact questions as well, and I think that I'm certainly happy to come back on again at any time.
We would love to have you in our studios and when you're back in Melbourne next time.
Well, next time, Manpreet, I'll do it live in the studio rather than me having to call in from Canberra where I am today because Parliament's in session. So
I could hear the bell ringing. So
the bells are ringing for you. Unfortunately, it was the Senate rather than the House of Reps,
right,
so I didn't have to interrupt the interview.
Thank you so much for your time. Do appreciate
Good on
that.
You. Thanks so much. SBS.com.au